Welcome back to Embrace the Spoilers, where we are about to spoil Black Panther. And it goes without saying, there are spoilers ahead.
Rhinos!
Welcome back, everyone, to Embrace the Spoilers, where today we will be talking about the final standalone MCU film before Infinity War comes out on May 4th and most likely blows our minds and makes us cry. I'm Garrett Weinzierl, and I'm sitting here as always with Jocelyn Moffat. Hey, Joss.
Hey, Garrett.
Are you ready for Infinity War? Are you like ready to kind of? I'm just expecting tears.
So I was expecting, I guess, a little bit more tie-in or something in Black Panther to the upcoming Infinity Wars, and I was not necessarily disappointed, but I was kind of like, huh, they really could have released this at any point in time until the final scene in the credits, and then I was like, haha, it's happening.
Yep exactly. Yes, yeah, I'm in the same, although I gotta say, I figured it would have very little tie-in because just I had seen like every trailer for this movie they put out.
I had seen like nothing. So I was super excited. The only stuff I'd seen was like the promotional images, like the movie posters and stuff. I didn't see any trailers. I had no idea what was happening. Yeah, I went into this movie pretty much blind.
Gotcha. Yeah, we still watch a lot of traditional cable here in the Weinzierl household. And so you see a lot of TV spots. Plus, I've seen quite a few full length trailers for this. And just watching this, I'm like, well, that villain's not in Infinity War, and that villain is not in Infinity War. I have a feeling this will be mostly a standalone story.
Mm.
I
was looking forward to seeing more about like Bucky, the Winter Soldier, right? Which, because we all knew that's where he ended up, right?
So yeah. Although I frankly had forgotten, that's where he ended up.
Because like Captain America and like his universe, that character, he's my favorite Avenger. Like those are my favorite of the kind of Marvel movies are the Captain America ones. So, I mean, they're kind of like, I've seen them the most. They're fresh in my mind. I love both him and Bucky as characters. So I, yeah, definitely was keeping track of that. And so I kind of thought like he might even be like in his little pod in the background in a lab or something, like just even just as like set dressing.
Yeah. After I saw the movie and, you know, came home, started working on notes for this, obviously I very quickly was reminded by, you know, looking at catching up on Infinity War and trying to remind myself about all of the Infinity Stones and all that kind of stuff. Obviously very quickly, like, oh right, that is where we ended up. I like had completely forgotten that we even saw Wakanda at any point in Civil War. But
that was the big like moment at the end when you got the big reveal of Wakanda. Was awesome.
Yeah, I don't know, there was so much. I was, for me, like Civil War just came down to, oh my god, that scene with Bucky and Cap throwing the shield back and forth was the coolest thing I think I've ever seen in a Marvel movie, and a new Spider-Man, and he's in the MCU. That was it, and like everything else kind of fell out of my brain. And I also have only seen that one once. I don't know why. Really enjoyed it. Probably should watch it more than once, but I only saw it the day it came out. So
I feel like, and I think I said this a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about actually covering Black Panther, I really feel like before Infinity Wars, I need to go back and I need to watch everything all over again. Like there are so many little like hints and tie-ins, and like I don't even know, like I know you've put in the notes like where all the Infinity Stones are, but I don't read the comics, so I have no concept of like how many there are.
Six.
I didn't even know that they had that they had names, so I was like, yeah,
I don't read the comics
like
either.
I need to go back and kind of like rewatch everything in order and kind of put the whole story together, because that's what they've been doing. They've been building up to Infinity Wars the entire time they've been making Marvel movies, right? So I feel like I need to go back and watch everything again.
Yeah, I haven't. We have hit this subject before because we've talked about other superhero movies, but neither of us are really giant comic nerds in that regard. I grew up reading comics, but not traditional superhero comics. I read a lot of like Aliens and Predator and Ninja Turtles and that type of stuff. I didn't read a lot of like spandex wearing superheroes. Since then, I have read a little Spider-Man and a little Guardians of the Galaxy, but that's about as far as my delve into it goes. I know about the Infinity Stones through osmosis, you know, through friends who are comic nerds, through roommates that I had in college when the first Iron Man came out, and they're like, "Oh my God, we're heading down this road. Let me tell you about the Infinity Stones." So it was I vaguely picked it up, but yeah, before the show, I went and I hit Wikipedia hard, so I've got notes, Jocelyn. I've got notes. But whatever the case is, yeah. So yeah, we're going to talk about Black Panther today. Before we do that, we do have a quick update about the show to make, which is if you are a patron at the $5 level per month or above, you can go and vote for the next month of Embrace the Spoilers. What is our poll after the patron suggestions, Jocelyn?
Well, we're going to be covering Tomb Raider for sure. We announced that on our little kind of mini episode that we did a couple weeks back. So we are covering Tomb Raider for sure, and we're covering Ready Player One in April for sure. So we're voting on the kind of one other title that we will be covering in March. So the patrons put their suggestions in, and our poll is going to be between A Wrinkle in Time, I Kill Giants, Red Sparrow, and the one that we all know is going to win, Pacific Rim 2, because come on.
I am pulling.
Not that I'm trying to sway people or anything.
I'll try and sway them.
I'm swaying people.
I'll sway them. I really want to talk about Pacific Rim 2. So let's get those votes up. Although I didn't know about I Kill Giants at all, and I looked it up right before the show, and that movie looks really freaking cool.
Yeah, we have a lot of really interesting kind of geeky movies coming out in March. So I think any of those titles that are going to be on the poll would be awesome for us to cover. So I'm happy and excited that you guys put in some really good suggestions this month. And yeah, I'm fine. I'll probably go see three, if not all four of these. So I'm good with whatever you guys pick. Yeah. Should be fun times.
I'm excited as always. I'm just really ready for Ready Player One because I just finished the book. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Also, it's Spielberg, and I can't remember the last time I watched a Spielberg movie. But whatever the case is, thanks again, by the way. And if you're out there and you're like, patrons get to vote, patrons can suggest topics, what the hell's going on? Well, we've got a Patreon up over at patreon.com/ETS where you can go and support the show. $5 a month gets you to the level that lets you vote in our polls, which dictate what we cover in following months. And $10 end up a month, let you suggest topics for those polls. So we thank everyone at patreon.com/ETS that's supporting us, and two new patrons since our last show, Sven and Kyle. No last names given for either of them. I trust they know who they are.
If not, thank you to all the Svens and all the Kyles out there in ETS land.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, let's move into it with let's talk about Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler of Creed and Fruitvale Station fame, and starring so many horrendously talented individuals, it would take me too long to mention. But my God, Jocelyn, what a cornucopia of talent, and also nerdy talent. A lot of like nerd cred going on in this list of actors and actresses.
Yeah, I especially like the actors and actresses that we got coming out of Black Mirror, because as we're going to talk about very, very shortly, we are actually covering season 4 of Black Mirror. And man, I love that show. And the talent that they find for Black Mirror is always amazing. So I love seeing those actors getting larger roles in actual not actual movies. Not like Black Mirror is not a thing, but you know what I mean? Like getting like
feature length,
big screen feature length debut type roles. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They got both Letitia Wright and Daniel Kaluuya. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. Have both been in Black Mirror, are both in this. Letitia Wright playing Shuri and Daniel playing Wakabi. Daniel also being the star of Get Out from last year. So this man's on fire right now.
Yeah. We didn't actually cover it, but that movie was horrifying and amazing.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. That was such a fun movie. I don't think I was supposed to have as much fun with it as I did. but
I hadn't even heard about it. I didn't even know what it was. And then we were, I think it was over Christmas. We ended up watching it because a lot of Matt's family goes to bed really early. They have, like, they work shift work and stuff. So they're used to getting up at like 5 a.m. And I'm like, I see 5 a.m. from the other side. So we ended up watching a movie and watching Get Out. And oh, man, it was really good. And again, yeah. I went into that movie totally blind, not knowing anything about it. And oh, so good. It's like edge of my seat suspense and horror the whole time. Oh, man, it was good.
Yeah, we ended up we kept meaning to see it and just kept getting delayed for whatever reason. And then we ended up seeing it over Thanksgiving. It just happened to be starting on HBO when we were winding down for the evening. We're like, oh, my God, Get Out. And it's on HBO. That means no commercials. That means no editing. Nothing's going to be cut from it. Let's just watch it. And had a really good time. Also, Jordan Peele. Holy crap. I didn't know he had him in it, had it in him. I just thought of him as strictly dude who makes really funny things. But yeah, so I mean, right off the top, Joss, just what is your gut reaction to Black Panther?
I very thoroughly enjoyed it. It had its moments that I thought weren't so great, but overall, I really, really liked this movie. It was I feel like of all the Marvel movies, this one had the most like heart, I guess. It felt like gave me like warm family-ish feels.
This, I don't yeah, know.
Like if
man,
that makes sense. Like it felt really like grounded and real, which sounds funny considering it's about a like magical technology society, but
yeah, I got like Firefly vibes, man. Like the scenes in the kitchen on Serenity when they're just sitting around being a family. You kind of get that in the Avengers films, especially when when Whedon was involved. But I don't, it's probably the characters, right? Especially the first Avengers, like they're all meeting mostly for the first time, whereas this is our first time meeting a lot of these characters, but we're to believe that they've known each other for a very long time, actually are family. And I think they sell that very well.
Oh, yeah. The acting in this movie was phenomenal. Like, just like I said, there was so much heart in it. They did such a great job. The world building was amazing. One of the things that I really liked is that they actually incorporated a lot of African traditions to create what became Wakanda. So there, like, that might be why it felt so warm and so grounded to me, is because it was created from a combination of a whole bunch of different African traditions. So I really loved it. I retweeted a tweet yesterday, I think. So if you guys are interested, there's actually like a whole list of what was taken from what different African traditions and cultures to create Wakanda. And it was, I mean, I guess not necessarily eye-opening, but very, very interesting to me to see all of the different tribes and cultures that were pulled into this movie. I thought it was a really nice tribute.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, stepping forward with the obvious kind of concession that we are just two white dudes, well, dude and dudette, with no ties to African tradition whatsoever. I had very much kind of the same thought. And afterwards, I came out of them and I thought to myself, on the subject of what you were talking about, I'm like, man, if they're just pulling from all these different things, I'm surprised it didn't feel like more of a theme park. Like you go to Disney or like you go to Animal Kingdom and it feels really like cheesy. But this, for whatever reason, I don't know how or why, but they seem to have skirted that.
I think it was because of the kind of world building that they did with Wakanda about how it was built from the five different tribes. So it was like, they were giving themselves license to do more of like a showcase. Like Wakanda didn't have to be any one culture. It was a kind of coming together of these five different tribes and all their different ways of being. So I thought that was actually very, very well done and gave them a little bit of license to do kind of the picking and choosing and differentiating. So I thought that was really good choice.
Yeah, this whole movie seemed to, specifically the world building with Wakanda, and I like what you're talking about all the tribes. It felt so elevated beyond all of the other world building of all of the other Marvel movies. It, yeah. it re, to me, it felt like Lord of the Rings And I mean that in as the highest form of compliment, like the sense of this world, especially I'm getting ahead of myself, but much later on in the movie, when our heroes are at their lowest point and they are forced to go and seek out the help of the tribe at which they are feuding with the most, that felt so much like rallying the kingdoms of men in Lord of the Rings. And it's just, I don't know. It was a gravity that I feel the MCU movies it just hasn't hit yet. And here I'm sitting here watching. I'm like, my God, this is the best thing, the best rendition of this I have seen since I first saw Rohan in Two Towers.
Oh, I completely agree. And just talking about the tribes and them kind of being at odds totally reminded me. I didn't even put it in the notes, but the trial by combat, the way that was done and the ceremony surrounding that, I thought was amazing. I loved how it was like just the two tribes kind of facing off, the leaders facing off, and then all of their like royal guards making the arena shrink, and then you know, having the straight drop of the waterfall on the other edge. And oh man, that it was so suspenseful. I felt like I really didn't know who was gonna win, like in any of the trials that they did. I was like,
there's so many times.
I am really worried for our hero right now.
there's multiple times during this movie I'm like, did they put T'Challa in the Infinity War trailer to just red herring? Right, like I'm pretty sure he's dead. twice in this movie I'm like, he dead. He's not getting back up. And to pull that off in this day and age, when we know what's coming, right? Like they can't keep this stuff under wraps, so they don't bother anymore, and they just give us trailers and they just announce things ahead of time. And if you can maybe keep one or two major plot points a secret, you have succeeded. But to make me second guess for even a moment that the lead character in this movie isn't going to make it through, I think it was a huge accolade. So my hot take as well is I loved this movie. I absolutely loved this movie, Jocelyn, and I don't know why I'm surprised, but I was surprised. Marvel keeps doing this. They keep taking heroes I either know nothing about or care nothing about and make me care about them. I mean, they started with Iron Man, for crying out loud. Like, if you could just rewind it and reset your brain to a time before the MCU, if someone had come to you and told you the biggest film franchise in the history of the world is going to start with Iron Man, you probably would have told the person telling you that they're completely crazy and they need to lay off the crack. But they managed,
very, very likely.
They managed to do that. And Captain America, for me, is the biggest example. Like, I thought Captain America was the lamest hero growing up. Just couldn't be lamer. And you're right. I think the Captain America movies, now challenged by Black Panther, are the best in the MCU. Bucky is my favorite character, which all the more reason I'm confused why I forgot what the hell happened to him at the end of Civil War. But... yeah, they just keep doing it. Black Panther is a hero I know very little about. Honestly, the trailers for this movie with like the, you know me, Joss, I get hung up on weird visual things. I didn't like in the trailer when they showed his suit just magically like unfolding around his body. Like, I don't like magic science that's so insanely advanced that it just makes no sense. Like, right. I like Iron Man because you can see all the parts and the joints and the pistons and where the combustion is coming from.
It ties it to what you know a little bit better than just this stuff glows blue and does everything. Ta-da!
Yes, exactly. And Guardians of the Galaxy, I also feels very grounded, but there's also portions where they kind of dip into, again, that magic tech. But I let it go a little more because it's this cosmic kind of space opera. But something about like Black Panther, because in the trailer, it's the scene where he like lands on top of that Lexus and like his suit appears. I'm like, oh, this is the real world. Why do we have this? I hate magic tech. Damn it. And like 5 minutes in this movie, I was just like, I don't care anymore, man. This movie's just great. Like, they made me get past that. And those are the kind of things I get really hung up on for admittedly extremely stupid reasons.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the tech in this movie, and just the way that they used vibranium in general. And I don't want to skip over this because Princess, it's Shuri was the princess, right?
Yes. Also known as Q from James Bond.
Yeah, she was like, I loved that they highlighted her when they first showed her to you. She had this like kind of fun, kind of quirky attitude, but definitely felt like the, you know, little kid sister, whatever, like kind of character that could be kind of ignored until like she walks away and turns back and gives her brother the finger. I was like, yes, all right. So, you know, the kind of seeing a little bit, she's got a little bit of personality, at least this is going to be good. And then when they actually showed us that she was like the head of Wakanda's tech, like she's the one making all of the kind of advancements in science. Like she is literally the smartest person in the world because she's dealing with something that even like Tony Stark doesn't have access to. Right. So she's this like scientific genius, literally the smartest person in the world. And she's a princess too. Like I was just like, oh my God, this character, I am so in love with her. And then the further we travel down the road of like meeting all the different women characters in this movie, I think that was the highlight of Black Panther for me, was the way that they treated the women, because you had Shuri, who was the amazing scientist, and then you had Nakia, who was the love interest, but not in a damsel in distress kind of way. Like she was like an international super spy activist. Like she was awesome and didn't spend the movie like just trailing after T'Challa. Like she was her own character and her own person. And he even said like, oh, come back and be my queen. She's like, no, that's dumb. I'm going to go actually make a difference in the world. Okay, bye. And then not to mention Okiya, she was amazing. She's this awesome warrior general, the head of this like set of warrior women who protect the king. And she is 100% loyal to the throne. And it was just so amazing to see these specifically these three women characters so fleshed out and acted so well and not pitted against each other in any way. Even in the scene where Nakia and Okiya were fighting after T'Challa was overthrown. And Nakia was like, we got to go. We got to leave. Like, we got to figure out how to do this. And Okiya was like, no, I'm loyal to the throne. Like, he won fair and square. I know it sucks, but, you know, like, so even when they had opposing viewpoints, they still weren't, like, tearing each other down, I guess, which is something that you see a lot of in pop culture, is just the way women are pitted against each other. So it's like they had three strong women characters doing amazing things without, like, getting in each other's way or being all catty and bitchy and stuff. Like it just, oh, it was so well written. It was so well written. I know, Garrett, I know you're laughing, but like,
no, it's just your unironic
things that I notice when I'm watching movies.
No, your unironic use of the word catty is all. That was the only thing I was laughing at, because you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a dialogue that is being had a lot recently. In recent years, this is a conversation of like, just put women in good roles, not roles that are necessarily female roles. And that's what I saw here. Like
scene you were three great characters, and then they just happened to be played by women.
Right.
As opposed to like trying to write in women characters. It's like, okay, we've got a spy, a tech person, and a general. Let's just make them chicks. And yeah, it worked.
Yeah, it's and you can apply this to really any kind of subsection. I've been watching a lot of Shameless lately, and I think what that show does so well is there's a lot of roles like that include gay characters, and it's not that it's like the gay best friend trope. It's just a really strong character that happens to be gay.
Right.
It's the same thing, and I'm seeing more and more of that. But this, I think, is probably the best example of that I can think of, because the exact scene you were talking about, where Danai's character was just refusing to leave with her friends and her, you know, not, they're not related by blood, but basically family, the way that they act around each other because of her sense of honor. Like, that's the kind of thing that like the fantasy geek in me like loses his mind about. I love like the push and pull, the conflict of a knight's honor. Like, oh, the king is a piece of shit, and I should probably revolt against the king, but I'm not going to, because it's my duty. This is something that Game of Thrones plays with all the time. And it's
That's
just like
what it reminded me of is the Kingsguard in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's sure. Like you took Jaime Lannister and you just threw Cersei in his armor. Like, it's just you would just have a good character, and it just happens to be played by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so anyway, like I said, man, the fantasy nerd in me was losing his shit during this whole movie, because it's a, this is a fantasy movie with cars and computers and magic tech. It, like, it really is. And they did such a beautiful job with it. I can't wait to rewatch it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is definitely a movie I think I'm going to be going back and watching again.
Yeah.
Because it was like the visuals were really great, with one exception, I feel like, later on in the movie. But
I see your notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just impressed basically scene by scene. And I had a horrible time watching this. I had like an entire family from Boston behind me that apparently had the driest feet in the world. They were just rubbing their feet together the whole time. So every time there was a quiet scene, I'm not kidding. I didn't know this was a thing. That's so I didn't know this was a thing that I could be annoyed by. But they were talking half the time, and then they weren't talking during the really quiet scenes, especially when we're dealing with ancestors. In mind visions and spirit journeys, just imagine the driest skins just rubbing up against each other like you're right. Two pieces of sandpaper just rubbing right by the back of your head because it's stadium seating and their feet are dangerously close to your head.
That's so disgusting.
Yeah, it was the weirdest, most specific thing I've ever been annoyed by. But like even through that, I just came out of this like, holy shit, Marvel did it again.
Yep.
But anyways, so yes, thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm going to keep making these references, but this movie is like, it's part James Bond, it's part Lord of the Rings, it's part Lion King, and it's the first Iron Man in a lot of ways, but at no point did I feel that it was redundant.
Mm. Yeah, I felt like for the majority, like they did a really good job. We've already mentioned the world building, but I feel like they also did a very good job with the character building, with the villains. Specifically, we had the Claw, who was the arms dealer from the Age of Ultron, right? Was when we first saw him.
Oh God, you're right.
But right? I mean, it was a very kind of brief appearance. I barely even remember that he was in it.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, and played by Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, yeah.
And then and then Killmonger.
Yes, and then the world building around Killmonger too, and his whole backstory, and I also liked kind of the journey that T'Challa went on, like learning more about his father and what happened, and we'll get into it a little bit later on, but you know, part of the building of Killmonger's story made the ending really disappointing to me. It was pretty much the only thing I really disliked about this movie. And I'm sure we'll get there eventually, but I liked all of the stuff around, like building up the arms dealer just to have him fall. And then, you know, like the real villain kind of showing himself, I thought was really interesting. And, overall, the kind of story around, whether Wakanda should intervene and how long that kind of argument had been going on, I found that really interesting. Like, what did you think about that whole kind of train of thought there, that whole story arc about, you know, like T'Challa's father and brother fighting and eventually, you know, one killing the other over the idea of showing themselves to the world and intervening in these really important moments? Because Wakanda, it's not like they were totally isolated. They'd been monitoring the rest of the world. And then as events were happening, choosing not to intervene. Which I found was really interesting and kind of made it so that Wakanda wasn't just the good guy, period. You know, like they had chances to do things like stop the Nazis and they chose to remain silent instead. So it kind of makes Wakanda this gray area as well.
Well, I mean, this has been exploring gray areas has been a huge thing, I think, in recent film and properties that we, you know, a few years ago, I don't think we would have gone there. I think we saw that in Last Jedi. We've seen it in the Captain America movies. Mm-hmm. His name is Captain America, and most of those movies are about how America is not always in the right. In I think really kind of poignant ways. So I thought this was pretty on brand for Marvel. I think it would have been really boring if they had gone any other way with it. They were just like, Wakanda is just a shining beacon of perfection and they do everything right. Like, I don't want to watch that. I don't care. I mean, that's kind of probably what kept me away from superheroes growing up was this thought that it was kind of black and white.
Right.
And I think it made for, I mean, you mentioned the villains. I think this movie has the strongest villains of any Marvel movie. I'm really struggling to think, because I'm sure I'm putting my foot in my mouth maybe a little, but I mean, before, if you had asked me, I would have said Loki's the best villain, but he's not really a villain anymore. And that's about it. I can't, like, what's his name? The dude in the first Iron Man was a pretty cool villain, but, you know, not that great. But both Andy Serkis and Michael B. Jordan are just scene stealers in this movie. And when Klaw, of course it's Klaw because he said it's got a freaking claw for an arm. When Andy Serkis dies, like, I was really mad in that moment. I'm like, no, he was the most fun villain in the history of Marvel. Like, he just, every second he was on screen, he just stole it. Absolutely stole it. But Killmonger really hadn't had his moment yet. And the movie, it was like the movie was just looking at me and going, hold my beer. Hold my beer if you think
Circus. Hella from Thor Ragnarok was really good too. Come on.
Who?
Hella?
Hella. Oh, right. Oh, shit. Sorry. I'm already forgetting. Yeah, Hella was amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
They have had some very good villains.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, this is like two different calibers, though. I mean, the villains in this were very rooted in kind of modern day sensibilities, whereas Hella is a literal god.
Yeah.
And you're right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry, I'm already forgetting. But
it's all right, you're forgiven.
But yeah, I was very disappointed when Andy Serkis died, and I still kind of am, but it's like I kind of, in my head, I think I recognize that it's really selfish. Like, I just really liked Andy Serkis, and I want to see more of him, and I don't think we're going to, but at the same time, you needed to get him out of the way some way, although I wish they would have done it by not murdering him.
Yeah, I'm kind of fine with the whole killing the arms dealer thing. I'm kind of glad that. And so, okay, so this is the part that I've had, I guess, the most problem reconciling in my head. And I would love to hear from you guys what you think about this, because the whole idea of the villain, like, I at first didn't want the movie to be like, white American dude versus like black African nation, you know, like, so I was happy that they killed him off. But then I was like, the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, well, but now we've kind of got this like almost stereotypical like black kid that grew up in a bad neighborhood without a father, who like seems just, like I said, a little bit stereotypical. And now we've got him fighting against his family and his like cousin. And, you know, like, so I'm not 100% sure that I'm OK with that narrative either. So I don't really know which one would be better. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a really odd narrative to me. And so I don't know what I would like from the villains, but I find I keep flip flopping back and forth over what I think a better villain and depiction would be in Black Panther.
And I see where you're coming from, and
I've literally been thinking, because I saw it on Friday night. I've been going back and forth on this like for days.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, like, when the movie opened and we're in like an Oakland apartment, I thought to myself, oh no, are we really going here? Like, right off the bat. But as the movie unfolds, I think it earns every single one of those beats, and I think it handles it extremely respectfully and in a real way.
I think that they maybe didn't give Killmonger enough. I mean, like, his nickname is Killmonger, come on. But I think that they maybe did a little bit of a misstep, because like they focus more on how he's a killing machine as opposed to how he's actually super smart. Like, I think there's like one line in the movie that I feel like if they'd flesh that out a little bit, then maybe it would have broken the stereotype somewhat, because like they say something about like he was like the youngest graduate from, I'm gonna say MIT, but I could be getting it wrong, but basically like some tech school at like age of 18 or 19 or something they said. Huh. And they glossed over that super super fast. It was the only mention of the fact that he's actually super smart too, because he just, when they actually like introduced him, and you know, like, he, when he killed Klaw, and then the movie was about him going forward, it was very much like, look at all my kill tattoos, you know, like I've killed all these men and I'm just going to go and start another war and we're going to conquer everyone. And it just, it very much like pushed to the side the fact that, you know, in spite of his situation and losing his father so young, he still really like rose up and made something of himself that wasn't just being a killer. And that kind of got lost a little bit for me in the movie. Because like I said, there was literally like one line about how he was like top of his class, super young and, you know, super smart and everything else. And then joined, you know, the army and was a Marine or whatever and went everywhere and killed everyone. Like,
I mean,
I just felt like they changed the narrative super quickly and maybe didn't give him enough credit.
I mean, Wakanda, at least as this movie puts it forward, is this balance of intelligence and also strength.
True. Yeah.
It kind of set itself up that way, and Killmonger had to be both because T'Challa has to be both. And I don't know. I right out in his first scene where we meet Killmonger, I took him as an intellectual. Like when he's in that museum and the snooty lady with the coffee is just dictating to him what all these things are. I'm watching this. I'm like, he knows what all this shit is. He knows everything he's telling her, and she's wrong about that particular weapon. And that, to me, that was them showing us how smart he is. Mm. Then they tell us how smart he is, and then we're done with that part of the movie. It's already gone and passed, and that's no longer relevant for the next stage of his plan, which is legitimately becoming king through Mortal Kombat.
Yes. Yeah.
So I guess it didn't bother me as much, and I was ready to not like him because I was so in like Team Circus, like, oh my god, I loved Andy Circus so much in this movie, Jocelyn. I cannot explain it, and yet by the end of it, I was just like, holy hell, what Michael B. Jordan brought to that character, what they brought to that character with plot, like by the end of it, I'm like, this is the most, I don't know, like well constructed conflict I think we've seen in a Marvel movie.
All right, then. I'm very interested because I feel like this is the best time to get into this since we've spent so much time now talking about Killmonger. I really did not like the ending.
Huh.
I didn't like how they dealt with him at all. I mean, you kind of knew how it had to end with T'Challa being victorious over him eventually. And I liked how they did that, how it was like the idea of T'Challa clearly didn't die, even though he was, you know, very, very close, but clearly didn't die, also didn't yield. So I found that interesting how they kind of said, this is the same challenge. You're not legitimately king yet. Like, we still have to finish our combat. I really liked that. But then in the end, when T'Challa stabs Killmonger, and we know from earlier in the film, and T'Challa even comes out and says, you know, we can heal you. And I did like the kind of slavery dialogue there, saying, you know, like, I don't want to be caged and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I did like that they kind of drew that parallel. But what I didn't like is that they ended up killing him. I thought it was a huge waste. I really wanted to give him a potential redemption story. Like, all T'Challa had to say there was like something along the lines of like, you know what? I wasn't right. You weren't right. But we both had, you know, good at like, yes, Wakanda. And I think that in the post-credit scene when T'Challa goes to talk to the UN, I think that he was like... He decides in the end to intervene to open up Wakanda, right? Which is basically what Killmonger wanted to do, although in a more violent kind of take over the world kind of a way. But still, I feel like the incorporation of Killmonger's ideas into Wakanda would have been better in the end. And I think that a redemption story for Killmonger would have been much, much more interesting. I mean, they gave Loki another chance. Like, I don't understand why we couldn't have had like some sort of dialogue between the two of them and kind of like Killmonger in an advisor sort of role or something. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it was just such a missed opportunity. And I was really disappointed when they just killed him at the end. Like,
well, I see where you're coming from. The first thing I want to retort with is, it's Marvel movies. They might still bring him back like this. No one's really gone. They can retcon this however they want. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily count him out because, but at the end of the day, I guess, I don't know, I just, I have significantly less of a pointed counterpoint to this than the last conversation we just had. I just want to say, I really liked the ending. And it's like when he has that comment about, you know, I'd rather die free than live in a cage, like, shit, how do you, there's no walking that back.
And, well, no, but then T'Challa could just say, well, how about I don't put you in a cage? Like, let's work this out or whatever. Like, your family, powerful. Your...
Huh? I don't think it's as narratively powerful. Like, it's that kind of... For me, that Seal Killmonger as a strong character. It's like, this character literally dies on his beliefs. Whereas, you know, if you have T'Challa coming with like, well... What if I backpedal a bit and give you a cool roll and we don't cage you up and yada, yada, yada. Like, I don't know. It just, I liked how that landed, how that whole moment kind of played out.
Well, and like, I agree. I liked that. I liked the line. I guess I just didn't like the way that it ended up in the end. Like, I don't know. I just, because I feel like had Killmonger just basically all he had to do was yield, right? And then that's the end of it, because he came, he challenged by combat, then T'Challa wins the like same as the and I'm totally forgetting what his name was, but the other chieftain who was up in the mountain, like, he did the same thing. They fought, and then, you know, he yielded, and Mabaku. Then he went back to rule his tribe, and, you know, done. I don't understand why they couldn't have had a similar outcome with Killmonger, and then had the chance to show him what being Wakandan actually means, because he's been half Wakandan his whole entire life, but doesn't really know what that means because he lost his father so young. So I just feel like there's could have been a very interesting redemption story there. And they just kind of said, nah, we'll just kill him. It's better. And I just don't agree with that.
I certainly am very interested in the story that you're setting up. So I will say, I hope they bring him back, but I like that this is where we end it, because we got to
make don't room think for Infinity War. Back. I think he's done.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think at most we might see him like in, like, if we ever see more of the like ancestor visions. Maybe we'll get him there as that's his advisor type role, but...
Hey man, I don't know. Infinity Stones are straight up magic. Who knows?
Yeah.
You might find a way. But
well, and that's the thing, right? Because, and this kind of leads into a little bit of the Infinity Stone discussion that clearly we're going to have. But if it's true that the missing Infinity Stone is actually what is powering these heart herbs or whatever they are, that give Black Panther his power, then Killmonger had that in his system as well, so maybe that's how those specific ancestors, all the old Black Panthers, are available to the current Black Panther in these visions, is because it's actually powered by an Infinity Stone. So maybe his essence, since he was the Black Panther, will still be available to T'Challa in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, also he might just resurrect a la Superman sitting in the ground for a little while. I mean, he still has the power of the Black Panther, so who knows. With enough time, maybe. I'm just saying, don't rule it out, Jocelyn. Don't rule it out. But okay, all right. Other than that, I didn't really bring up anything that bugged me in this movie. But maybe that it dragged a little bit. There were a couple times in this movie where I'm like, are we still in the climax of this movie? My God, this battle's going on forever. It feels like Return of the King, which is not a compliment. I thought Return of the King went a little long in places.
So I really enjoyed the final battle part, especially when, oh my God, the Rhino came and then he,
Rhino?
Yeah.
Oh, that was Wakabi. That was Daniel Kaluuya's character.
Yeah, when he jumped off the rock onto the rhino, I literally turned to Matt and I was like, I want to get a rhino. There's another couple sitting right next to us and just started laughing. I'm like,
oh, the
that
scene
was really freaking cool.
The scene where you're introduced to the rhinos very early on when they go to visit, I guess, Wakabi's, like, his tribe's kind of location. That's right, when the people behind me were talking. Protectors. And so I didn't really pick up on it. I was just like, oh, get out, dude, has rhinos, I guess. That's nice. Like, because I couldn't hear over the stupid snowbirds talking behind me. but yeah, like, the man, this movie like makes good on every little breadcrumb it drops, because like during that scene, yeah. I'm seriously like, oh yeah, just they have rhinos. This will never come up. And then rhinos show up and charge in the battle. I'm like, oh shit, I forgot about the rhinos. It was good. Like overall, I thought the final battle was really good. It's just it seemed a little lengthy.
Yeah, I didn't really mind it. The thing that I guess that bothered me the most in terms of, I guess, kind of like battle type scenes weren't necessarily the battles. It was more the deaths didn't seem to have, like, regardless of the amazing acting, because Okiya's face when one of her fellow warrior women had her throat slit, like the pain and the sadness and the anger. Like, I don't even know how she showed all of those things the way that she did. Like, it was she amazing, amazing job. But the actual death itself, like, and I don't need a whole ton of gore and stuff, right? But it just, like, I don't know. It felt so, I felt like Zuri, Forrest Whitaker's character, his death was very similar as well. Like, quick, not graphic.
They can't,
and again, like, I don't know how much graphic I want, but...
It's a concession of the fact that this is a Marvel movie. They got to get that PG-13 rating.
I guess so, but it felt like there just wasn't a lot of weight to the deaths, and it felt a little bit I think you nailed it just with the whole PG-13 thing, right? Like,
yeah.
They have to do the quick cutaways and the you know,
no blood.
Lifeless body, even though they're fighting on a white platform, someone just had their throat slit and there's no blood anywhere.
Yeah, I mean,
but it kind of was a little bit off-putting, I guess, to me in the battle.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just gonna keep reiterating to myself, I see where you're coming from. I had an opposite reaction. My reaction was, I can't believe they're pushing it as far as they are. People die in Marvel movies, but it's usually like an explosion, so that the body is consumed by fire, and you just don't. We don't need to try and reconcile stab wounds or gunshots. Like, and even gunshots are an easier thing to just be like, oh, probably got lodged in his body, and we're gonna just quickly cut to an angle where you wouldn't see the blood in the first place, and like that, you can reconcile that easier. I don't know. I feel like they could have shown even less. Like, they show that the blade going into the person, and then that's where they pull back. It doesn't go any further than that. There's no blood. There's, you know, no horribly rendered wounds or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
But I don't know. To me, I was like, wow, freaking Ryan Coogler is really pushing it. What he can get away with in his Marvel movie. We got middle fingers. We got people saying shit right and left. People getting stabbed to death. Like, I don't know. I'm a huge horror movie fan. I am the guy that likes to watch the Evil Dead remake because the gore is just amazing. It's disgusting and it makes me want to vomit, and I love every minute of it. But I don't know, for whatever reason in this movie, I was just like, yep, that's just how they had to make this.
Yeah. And I wonder if it wasn't necessarily the gore that I was missing, but it was the quick cuts away from, the bodies that made the deaths themselves just feel like throwaway nothings. Mm. I guess. And then there was no kind of like follow-ups to it. There was no like, and I mean, like, not necessarily thinking, warrior woman death, but more, Zuri's death, like, because of when and how it happened, I understand why there was no like big state funeral for him or anything like that. You know what I mean? Because T'Challa wasn't in charge at that point in the movie. But yeah, it just seemed like, oh, he's dead now. He's gone. Okay, whatever. Like, and moving on.
I don't know. Chadwick Boseman, played T'Challa. Like, his reaction to Zuri dying. I had kind of the same reaction that you did to Denai's performance when one of her guardswomen died. So I don't know. Again,
that's what I say. Like, the actors' reactions in the moment were phenomenal. Like, all the we've said this a billion times in this episode now, all the actors did an amazing job. The deaths fell a little bit flat for me. That's all. But I liked like the story arcs, and I liked, you know, killing the ones they did when they did. But yeah, there was just something about the direction of those scenes that just didn't hit home for me.
Yeah. I could be biased too, because I clearly thought this movie had some pacing issues. So if we like took some time for a Zuri funeral, I would have just been like, for the love of God, give me Mbaku back. He's awesome.
Yeah. No, I know. And I didn't necessarily feel like it dragged at any point. Like, I never felt like it was particularly slow. But I was also enjoying trying to figure out what all the little breadcrumbs were that they were dropping, because there were a lot in this. Like, there was even like one throwaway comment when Martin Freeman's character, Agent Ross, when he was after he had been healed and he was seeing all the tech and stuff. And then Shuri gives him this throwaway line about how she like built the train and it like deactivate, because vibranium is hard to transport, so it deactivates it while it's in the sound wave thing. And I was like, oh, that's coming back.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about with the rhinos. Like, everything this movie kind of sets
everything
up,
all those breadcrumbs.
It caches.
So
it
I was always looking for those. So then I felt like any parts where it might have, maybe you thought it was dragging, I was still interested, because I was like, wait, what did they say? Oh, what's happening?
I did not think any scene with Shuri was dragging. I would have been more than happy to spend all the time in the world with the best rendition of Q and Donatello the world has ever seen.
I freaking loved when she was driving that car remotely. Man, that was so cool.
I just want to rewatch the sandal scene over and over again, where she gives T'Challa the hugest ration of shit in the world for lame sandals. I don't know why that, I guess because I'm Floridian and like we live and die in our sandals here. Like that joke landed so on point for me.
Yeah. Other than that, I think that's pretty much it for the. I mean, there was one scene that I thought was really terribly shot too, but I don't even know if we need to talk about that.
You think the final falling fight scene, right, between Killmonger and
When they're falling down into the mine, like, because I know normally this is the sort of thing that you harp on that I don't even notice. Like, I generally don't notice CG or anything. I think movies just look cool. So, but this one, oh my God, I wrote it in the notes. It looks like two rag dolls without any bones who were fighting in front of an obvious green screen. It's like they were just like, blah, 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 blah.
Well, to me, it didn't look like they were, the whole thing just looked too CG, because I think even the actors in that particular scene were just, it was just CG. It just looked a little rubbery.
Rubbery. And I was like, I said to Matt after the movie, I was like, why didn't they just go to one of those giant fan things and then like green screen out the background, just to get the characters like free falling and fighting and stuff. Like, why would you just CG that whole thing?
Suspend them by wires and have them actually punch each other, please. Thank you. Like, the background was fine. That would have looked good. Just composite some actual dudes in costume, please.
Yeah.
And they do that well. I mean, they did a lot of that in the first Avengers. I mean, it looked pretty solid. But
just that one particular falling scene, I was like, guys, you were doing so well right up until now.
Yeah, I've always kind of cut the Marvel movies a little bit of slack in that regard, because they all kind of look a little CG in places, some more than others. Like what the hell were the aliens called in Avengers? I don't know. Whatever the hell they were called, they looked CG. Rock dude who made me laugh a lot in Thor Ragnarok, he looked CG. It's not fooling me. And you just kind of, I got to roll with it. I guess it doesn't bother me.
I think it's because in this movie, I didn't notice any other points where it was like blatantly CG, you know, like where it really stuck out like a sore thumb. And then it's like they had this scene slotted in and it was supposed to be so weighty. It's like, you know, finally we've got, you know, our big showdown between Killmonger and T'Challa. And oh, God. Oh, no. What's happening?
Now that you mentioned it, though, I do have to say, and I promise I'm not just trying to have a counterpoint to everything you disliked or liked in this movie, but the time my brain went, ooh, CG, was the rhino. When the rhino starts charging, I'm like, oh, that is one CG ass rhino.
See, and I didn't even notice that. Normally, I don't notice at all. But yeah, just that one falling scene in particular, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. I will also give your CG a pass if at least your design is cool. And the rhino armor it was dope. So I was like, ooh, it looks CG, but at least it looks cool. It's not like, what was it, Steppenwolf in Justice League? That was just a bad design with bad CG. Just like, hey, can we get a generic villain from PS2 era video games? Yes, please. Thank you. So that's kind of what bothers me there. But yeah, to get off that train, man. Yeah, I don't know. I'm picking nits here. I really just liked this movie.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, the things that I didn't like outside of the stuff that we discussed with Killmonger and how they dealt with him in the end. Overall, I really liked the movie. I loved like so many of the different plot points. I loved the treatment of the women. I loved the feeling of family. I loved after they thought T'Challa was dead and all the stuff where they had to go hiking up the mountain to try to talk to the other fifth tribe of Wakanda. And it just like it hit so many great notes for me that the things that I didn't like didn't even come close to spoiling the movie for me. I really think that this is a great movie everyone should go see. Not to mention the fact that it is leading up to Infinity Wars, which is coming very, very shortly. So I am super stoked for that and want to go back and watch everything else before that comes out.
Yeah, man. Freaking, I'm really looking forward to it. And I fear for certain characters' lives. But okay, so now is probably as good a time as any to do the kind of let's count the Infinity Stones because there's supposed to be 6 of them. We've seen 5 of them. Verbatim, like in the digital flesh, I guess, so far. So to recap, the Space Stone, we've seen that was first in Captain America. It's also known as the Tesseract, which is actually
in Captain America? Wasn't that in Thor?
I think it's in Thor as well, but technically Captain America taking place back in the, Second World War is like the in the timeline the first time it shows up.
I see. Okay.
As far as we know, like in a MCU timeline, the first appearance of an Infinity
Stone.
Okay,
because I was thinking, I was like, did Thor happen before Captain America? And I'm sure the Tesseract was in Thor. But if you're talking like actual chronological order, then yeah, Captain America.
Yeah, which I think just makes the Tesseract the first either way. It was the first one to show up in a movie, I think, and also the first one in chronological order.
Right.
Then we've got the Reality Stone, which I had to look this up. I completely forgot the hell what this thing was. It's the red dust called Aether in the second Thor movie, The Dark World.
Which, to be honest, I think I've seen once and I really don't remember. I did not remember that there was, something magical and powerful in The Dark World. I need to go back and watch so many of these movies.
Yeah, Thor, second Thor especially. Again, I saw that once. I remember really enjoying it, but that was it. I'd love Christopher Eccleston, too, by the way, who was the bad guy in that movie.
Well, and I feel like in a lot of cases with these movies, other than the Captain America franchises that I've seen so many times, but a lot of the other ones I've only seen like one time. And I feel like I wasn't even aware kind of the Infinity Stones until I want to say even possibly as late as Avengers. Like you can tell that there's like powerful artifacts, but I just wasn't even aware of the Infinity Stone concept. So it wouldn't have been something I was necessarily watching for when I was watching Dark World. Because the next one, the Mind Stone, is the one that Vision has, right?
Yeah. It was blue. It used to be in Loki's staff, which we saw many, many times before eventually it was kind of revealed. I would argue maybe retconned into being the Mind Stone, which basically created Vision.
Right.
So now it's still sitting in Vision's head, which means I guess Vision's not long for this world. If Thanos is going to get all the Infinity Stones, like it's going to happen, right? Like spoiler alert.
I feel like he has to, right? Exactly.
Spoiler alert. The Infinity Gauntlet is going to happen at some point. So, yeah, which doesn't bother me that much. I'm not that. I was never on the Vision train. As far as
I don't mind him, I think he's pretty cool. I do. He's the one that has the kind of close connection with
Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, because I really like her. So anyone who's kind of tied to her by extension, then I also enjoy.
I've been down on that because I just really want X-Men to get thrown into MCU so that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver can have the attachment to that Magneto that they should have had.
Never gonna happen, Garrett.
No, I disagree. gonna have to be some hardcore retconning. But yeah, I think it'll happen eventually. Eventually. But yeah, so that's a Mind Stone. The Power Stone is the purple one that is the crux of the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And then the Time Stone was in Doctor Strange, which every time I think about it reminds me that I really liked Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I've seen Doctor Strange a couple times, too. I feel like the more recent Marvel movies I've watched more than I've watched the original Marvel movies. Like, I think I've seen... Oh, my God. I'm actually not 100% sure if I've seen Iron Man all the way through to the end.
What? What? Tony Stark built this in a cave with a box of scraps.
I have, like, no memory of Iron Man. I saw it way after everyone else, after everyone said, oh, my God, this is the best movie ever, blah, 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 hype, 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 hype. So then I started watching it, and it would have been, like, just at home, and I don't even remember if I finished it.
All right, guys. Well, your homework is to definitely go and watch all of Iron Man. Because it's the only all-around good Iron Man movie. It's the only Iron Man movie I don't need to make excuses for. Two is just kind of not good, and three is good for half of it. In my opinion. But anyway, so the sixth and final stone is the Soul Stone, which... I wasn't counting Infinity Stones because I didn't read the comics, but apparently everyone was that does count Infinity Stones was kind of waiting for it to show up in Black Panther, and it never did, unless you read an article over on GameSpot that kind of puts forward the suggestion that, hey, it probably actually did. Probably whatever the vessel that is keeping the Soul Stone is probably under Wakanda, you know, may have landed along with the vibranium and is basically powering their superpowered heart plants.
Which makes a lot of sense to me, mostly with the argument of if the heart shaped herbs that give Black Panther his powers are in fact due to vibranium, it doesn't make any sense that they only grow in that one little small garden. It would make a whole lot more sense if there was something specifically under that very small garden that was then giving the heart-shaped herbs their powers was totally separate from the vibranium, because vibranium, though it is, you know, a source of energy and can be turned into a weapon and powers all their tech and everything else, it has never been, you know, like straight up magic. The heart-shaped herb is much more like magical healing powers, which I guess vibranium did have as well, but like magical healing and vision quests, basically, are the things that came from the heart-shaped herb, in addition to the obviously super speed and strength and stuff. But
yeah, vibranium's been...
Those are kind of like the calling cards of the heart-shaped herb. I think that sets it apart from vibranium is the whole, you know, vision quest stuff.
Yeah, to me, vibranium's always just been non-biological. It can do a lot of things, yeah, but nothing biological.
Except heal spines.
Oh, right. I guess they did do that with vibranium. Then, well, that's like saying you can fix someone's
tech.
Right. It's the same as saying you can fix your grandmother's hip with some metal.
Yeah.
Like, I draw the line there. It's not, I don't think you're going to infuse someone's blood with vibranium and all of a sudden they're going to be a superhero. Although that's basically how we got Wolverine. It was just a different metal. Do you want a Wolverine? Because that's how we get Wolverine. And the answer is yes, I do want a Wolverine. I do.
So there is a possibility, or that's the theory, that the Soul Stone is actually underneath Wakanda, which I think is very interesting because obviously in Black Panther, Killmonger destroyed all of the existing heart-shaped herb plants. But if that is actually the Soul Stone, then it means the line of Black Panther doesn't end with T'Challa, which I think is good and interesting and needs to happen.
Hey, shitting on Justice League bonus round, Jocelyn, do you think any of the Infinity Stones will be taken by Thanos because our heroes just forgot to guard it?
Probably not.
Okay. I don't think so either. I just seen in Infinity War, like, Black Panther's just hanging out with Tony Stark, and you just see a beam come down, and was that over Wakanda? Ah, damn it.
Although it would be interesting if like Wakanda is not necessarily prepared for an attack or a siege or anything like that. And because they don't know that they have an Infinity Stone, I feel like that could be like perfectly understandable. Like, because they don't know if, obviously, they didn't tell us. Like, they're just, there is the garden. It would have been, oh, you know what would have been awesome? If they'd had another post-credit scene that was them, like, digging up and replanting the heart-shaped herb garden, trying to make, you know, something grow from the remnants of what was burned, and they dig up the Infinity Stone? Damn!
Yeah. That could also, mind you, be a pretty solid way to reintroduce us to Wakanda in Infinity War. Like, if
that's
we come
true,
back and you know, enter scene.
An opening scene, yeah.
And they're digging things up. I'm like, what the hell is this? Or what? I mean, I'm sure they write a better script than that. That's just lazy writing. But, yeah. Man, that now this has me thinking, like, I'm surprised none of the taking of the Infinity Stones has happened across any of the films. Because are we just going to enter Infinity? Because I cannot. There's six of them. We're not. Are we really going to have six scenes of Thanos stealing shiny gems? I don't think so.
Well, we might. That might be the entire first movie is him getting the stones, right?
Yeah, you're right. I guess it is a part one and a part two, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a two-parter. So
makes sense.
I feel like that would be kind of a good climax / cliffhanger of part one would be da-da-da, he has all the stones. What will happen now? Will our heroes die? Will they be able to save the Earth? Find out next time on Infinity Wars.
Oh, I love your announcer voice. I feel like I've heard all podcasters I work with do an announcer voice but you, and now my life is complete. So good. And then finally we have to talk about the post-credit scene. I mean, there were two of them. One of them was just a really cool, warm and fuzzy T'Challa kind of coming into his own as a leader scene.
I loved the little sideways glance when I don't even know which country it was, but insert old white guy here was like, what can a third world country full of farmers bring to the United Nations?
Oh yeah.
Just a little like smirk.
The line of "it's a Bugatti spaceship" had me rolling. I was absolutely dying. But then if you stay all the way to the end, we finally get to see Bucky.
Yes.
We finally get to see Bucky. He's referred to as White Wolf, which I'm not sure if it's just Shuri being cheeky again or they're referencing apparently a semi-famous villain from the Black Panther mythos.
Yeah, so I don't know anything about this whole White Wolf thing at all, but the article that we did find talking about the White Wolf and that villain does sound like they took a lot of that and put it into Killmonger, which is kind of good because, I mean, we've already had Bucky as the villain, although not in control of his own mind, but still, like, he's already been the bad guy. He's in the middle of his redemption story now, which, again, another redemption story that apparently Killmonger didn't deserve, but whatever. Bucky is in the middle of his redemption story right now. So if they like made him good fighting beside Captain America and then made him bad again as, you know, a villain in the next Black Panther, I'd kind of be like, oh, really? Like, do we have to go up and down, up and down, up and down?
More ammo for my thought that this is just the pause button on Killmonger. There's just too many redemptive arcs happening right now. They didn't want another one, but he's going to come back eventually, Jocelyn. Eventually, Jocelyn, we're going to run out of redemptive arcs. And mark my words, we're going to see Killmonger come back and be awesome. He's not dead. They just hit pause in a dramatic fashion.
I guess we'll see.
You're a Warcraft fan. That's all they do in that freaking universe. He's dead. No, he's not. He's back. Time travel. Just wait till J.J. Abrams gets involved. It's coming. Abrams will eventually direct an MCU film, and we're going to get time travel immediately.
I hope not.
I hope not as well, Charles. I'm joking. But yeah, I'm glad to see Bucky back. One last scene we probably don't really need to worry about in the beginning of Infinity War. He's just here. He's awake. Let's move on with our lives. So,
and there's a comic, right, that actually details how Shuri fixed Bucky's head.
Yep. It's out right now. It's called Avengers Infinity War Prelude. And imagine just a longer version of that kind of post-credit scene where Bucky is still on ice, more or less, and Shuri is explaining to T'Challa how she's developing like a mental algorithm to suppress all the things that he was kind of indoctrinated with, while still not kind of getting rid of who he is. Mm-hmm. So,
I look forward to seeing him in Infinity Wars. I think there's like a scene from one of the trailers that I did see showing T'Challa, Captain America, Bucky, Okia, and I think one or two other, Hulk might have been in there too, kind of like leading the charge of an army. And I'm just like, yes, this is going to be so good.
I'm so ready, Jocelyn. I'm so ready.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't believe it's coming so quickly. Like the fact that we had like Thor into Black Panther into Infinity War all in the same like 9 month period is just crazy.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it was as much because it was BlizzCon, so November. November, then February, then it's the beginning of May, right? So
yep.
March, April, May. 7 months. Math.
Yeah, man, that's a lot. I need to start my rewatch like a month ago. That's when I need to start it. And now I think Katie's gonna come home today. I'm gonna be like, hey, how do you feel about watching Iron Man?
So. I definitely need to go back and watch all of them. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a good time. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Embrace the Spoilers. I just can't state enough how much I liked this movie. It was a good time.
I feel like what we should do if we're actually going to watch all of the Marvel movies, just kind of like on our own time, we should like just start a hashtag. Be like, hashtag Embrace Infinity Wars. And
how about
like all of our thoughts as we're going back through the Marvel stuff? That would be really cool. And then that gives you guys something to kind of to follow along with. So if you guys want to watch with us.
To keep it shorter, how do we feel about hashtag ETSMCU?
I like that too.
Okay.
Let's do it, man.
Doing it? All right. All right. Yeah. So if you at home are doing your MCU rewatch, we're going to start ours. And you have thoughts or discussions you'd like to get into, use the hashtag ETSMCU. I'm going to do it right now. I'm setting up in TweetDeck a custom column just for that. You can hear me doing it. Done. All right. Thank you again to our patrons over at patreon.com/ETS for helping us kind of make the jump from Embrace the Spoilers to just being kind of a per show thing to at least twice a month thing. If you would like to see it happen more than twice a month, go to patreon.com/ETS. It is a monthly Patreon, not per episode. So whatever works for you works for us. Also, if you'd like to email in, we have a Gmail set up. EmbraceTheSpoilers@gmail.com is where you can write in. But before we go, Jocelyn, you do other things than just spoil things. Where can people find those things? I said things too many times. I should get better at speaking.
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. I do all kinds of cool stuff. But the thing I want to talk to you guys about today is if you are interested in Sea of Thieves, which is the new video game from Rare, then please do check out Gamers In Presents Shipwrecks and Shanties. It's a short run, 6-episode show that I'm doing alongside Civ, and we are talking all about Sea of Thieves, what you can expect from the game, and we're basically trying to gauge interest to see if there's enough interest and enough news to actually keep the show going past release. So it does release on March 20th. Our last episode is planned to be March 21st. So if you guys could, give it a listen and let me know what you think. We would love to hear from you.
I got to play it this weekend, and that game blew my mind.
Right? And holy that the beta is hell. Like 25% of the content. It's awesome.
I love pirates. I love pirates. I grew up in Florida. Yeah. We have museums dedicated to treasure. I've been wanting a game like this forever. I'm with you though. I've got nothing but good things to say about it. I am cautiously optimistic though, because I'm like, how long can I really go to get three of my other buddies to get online just so I can pilot a ship? Like, how realistic is that for the long term? The answer is I don't know, but I was blown away with what I played over the weekend.
I actually enjoyed just the two-man ship. I think that was my favorite, because I've done the two-man, the four-man, and the solo ship, and I think the two-man is my favorite.
Well, you've done a good job kind of mining Civ into up and out into the podcast landscape, because that man has opinions, as you know, and his opinion was the two-man ship is shit. How dare you even consider it or breathe its name in my presence? Let's get a galleon. And so I only had a few hours to play that one night, and so that's all I had experience with. By the way, it's really fun when your two random party members just take off with your boat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. just say no to randos.
Yep. Folks, I'm Garrett Art on Twitter, where you can now tweet to me about your MCU rewatch, and I'll probably be tweeting out into the universe as well about that. Man, I'm so excited for Infinity War all of a sudden. And all the podcasts I do are TheAngryNerd.tv. I'm doing my solo show, The Angry Nerd, again. It's basically turned into a cocktail show, at least for now. So if you like cocktails and you want to listen to me drone on for about 20 minutes about Campari, I did just that last Friday.
I don't even know what that is.
Next time we hang out, I will make you not one, but probably five drinks with Campari. Not all in the same sitting, unless you want to rage. So, anyways, go check that out and all of the other shows at emove.tv. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Embrace the Spoilers. Thank you all for listening. And once again, I have no on-brand outro, so I'll just say, enjoy your rewatch, everyone.